Hey, Scott Hansen here.
Pat McClain, thanks for listening to this podcast. This one today, I think you're going to find it, is one of our best ever.
I really don't think we should use this one.
Why?
Because it'll be ran all the time.
I know. It's sarcasm.
Okay. It's sarcasm. If you've heard this before, you've heard it. Enjoy the podcast.
And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you're with us on this weekend, or maybe you're listening to us on the podcast, wherever you are. Glad you are here with us, both myself and my co-host. We are both financial advisors. You're thinking, oh, great. No.
Is that what they're thinking?
Not on the financial side. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial future. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And whether you have advisors you're working with today, or you do things on your own, or you're just getting started or restarted or whatever the case, we want you to consider this program another place for valuable information and a place where you can get a second opinion or a first opinion or whatever the case may be regarding something in your life. And if you'd like to be part of the program, anything financial related, would love to hear from you. Our number to join the show is 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, that's 1-888-242-6766. And we'd love to hear from you and
Make it easy.
And before we take some calls, there's been some interesting things in the news. Several years ago, back in the 90s, we saw technology companies, when it was kind of, remember the new economy, companies would go, they'd have venture capital raise them when they're the early days, then go public as soon as they could. And the public markets would drive the prices higher and higher. We saw mutual funds buying into the tech stocks. A lot of people participated in the tech run-up and then bubble. And unfortunately, a lot of individuals participated after they blew up.
But remember, when these companies went public, the venture capital firms behind it were just looking for a quick cash out. That's what they were.
Liquidity.
Yeah. I remember one. I was talking to one, and I said, well, what
talking
are you—
Talking to one what?
I was talking to a venture capitalist about, he said, yeah, we got the stable, and we're trying to get them to market as quickly as possible. This was in 98, 99. And I said, what do you think about their outlooks? And he said, what do you mean? I said, the companies. He said, the companies doesn't matter. He said, it doesn't matter what the company does. It matters how quick we could sell these things. Because you don't
that was
wanna,
back in the day.
That was back in the day.
And companies would go public relatively early on when the valuations of the companies were still relatively small. And there was a period of time when every once in a while there'd be a company that before they went public, the valuation just raised from other venture capitalists where the company would be north of $1 billion. And they were very rare, so rare that they were called unicorns. So if a company was still private, planning on going public,
and it was worth over $1 billion,
they'd call it a unicorn. Well, for a number of reasons, the companies haven't gone to the public markets as quickly as they had in the past. Obviously, one of the big reasons is the Dodd-Frank laws that make it much more complicated. We also saw, what was the one that was earlier before then? There's just been a number of regulations.
That make it more difficult.
Yeah, just a lot of the rules and regulations. Most people say they don't want to go public unless they have to. Well, we've been seeing a number of companies, large companies, companies like Uber, for example. They are not publicly traded. They're Airbnb.
Huge values. Now, not market valuations, but valuations.
Yeah.
It is a market, not a traded market.
Not public, but private markets where people buy into. We saw these 2 years ago, there were about 45 companies, private companies valued at over $1 billion. 45 of these unicorns. As of February last month, 146 venture capital firms that were valued at more than $1 billion, right?
But that number has actually fallen some.
Well, what we're starting to see fall are the valuations. And here's how we can see it. Now, venture capital companies, they're private companies. So
they don't have to tell the world what's going on. They don't tell the world. They're only going to tell their
the
own
people
investors.
That are interested.
Yeah.
Or and people that are looking to buy into them.
Yeah. And a lot of them, they say, look, we're not going to worry about what the valuation is because we'll wait until we have some liquidity. Then we'll know what the valuation is. Maybe we'll give us some sort of estimate, but it's really not that important to us what the estimate is. What's important is that we have a liquidity event at some point in time so we can cash out. Mutual fund companies, on the other hand, are required by law to come up with their value on a daily basis. So what's interesting thing, for example, Fidelity and Wellington both have investments through their mutual funds
in
and some of these venture capital companies. Now, you're thinking, Hanson McLean, does Hanson McLean do this thing? No. I mean, Hanson McLean, while we invest in our clients' money in mutual funds and ETFs, we're not looking for this sort of
this wouldn't normally fit the stable that we're looking for.
That's correct. In any case, these companies have to do the valuations on a daily basis. Between Fidelity and Wellington, just this year they've marked down 13 of these companies by at least 5% or more. None have been marked up. Now, to put things in perspective, the second quarter of last year, 14 were marked up. Only 3 marked down. So we're seeing this shift in less than a year.
Of the valuations of these non-traded companies.
Come down dramatically.
And they are high flyers. They really are. Whether they're publicly traded or not, you look at the valuations. Even their what they call the price to sales ratios are out of sight. Not even the price to earnings, but the price to sales ratios are out of sight.
And they feel a bit like, I was talking to a friend of mine last weekend. Had dinner, a small dinner party. He works for a private tech company, and he's just talking about how he spent this last week on a roadshow trying to raise money, going to venture capitalists all over the place, right? Everywhere.
It's a roadshow.
He was in Seattle for the day.
Doing a dog and pony.
Trying to raise money, private company, trying to raise money. And he said, it's like all of a sudden the music stopped. He says, now compared to what it was 6 months ago, it's like no one wants to invest in anything.
And so is this a sign? What it is a sign is that there's not as much frothiness in the
there's no froth anymore.
There's in the high flyers. That investors are looking for earnings. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for stable earnings.
Well, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this is going to play out because these companies, if you're a venture capital firm, here's how these venture capital firms work, by the way. It's not always just one person with
like
a ton of money.
Yeah. It's not like the Showtime series Billionaire.
I never saw that.
I tried to watch it.
Okay. Typically, a venture cap, they raise money from individuals and pensions and
what they call family offices. Even big financial institutions like Fidelity or Wellington or pension plans like... unions will put part of their pension plans or
but
states
the fact
will
is,
put part of their
have,
pension plans.
They have to at some point in time give the money back to their investors, right?
Yeah, they typically have timelines on their investments.
Yes, 7 years maybe, 7 to 10 years, you'll have all your money back. Their idea is you invest in a venture capital fund. They say we're going to find great companies. 1 out of 10s get ahead of home run. A couple are going to do pretty well. Some are going to go bankrupt, but don't worry. We're great at picking them.
In the end.
But you're going to do really well with us, so invest your money with us. So they need some sort of liquidity event so they can give their shareholders, their partners, essentially, their money back.
Yeah, and it's not unusual for a venture capital to sell their share of a company to another venture capital firm.
Yeah, it happens all the time. But right now, there's 146 companies valued at over $1 billion. None of them are being increased in value. It looks like they're being decreased. There's been a number of companies where they've had to raise more capital at lower valuations, which means if you were the person who just invested thinking you're going to get rich on it,
you lost money.
You just lost money because they agreed to. You might have watched Shark Tank. It's not that different, just on a bigger scale, right?
Yeah.
When they
but they don't do it in front of television studios.
And they don't have that music going.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 whatever it is.
And their people aren't nearly as pleasant in the room as they are on the Shark Tank.
They all pleasant? They're all like Mr. Wonderful or something. In any case, watching this market, it feels like a miniature, a contained
1990. When you say watching this market, you're not the broad market. I'm talking about publicly traded,
the non-publicly traded technology market.
Yes,
it feels like a contained tech bubble.
Scott, there are some companies out there, especially in the tech sector, that certainly had the feeling, or did have the feeling, not too long ago, of these high price to earnings ratios where there was a lot of pie in the sky going on. A lot of pie in the sky. It was similar to 1998-99.
Yeah.
It just wasn't as broad.
And if you're living in the Silicon Valley and you're trying to find a place to rent,
buy,
rents are ridiculous. They get a nice signing bonus and a high paycheck.
Parts of Denver, absolutely, as well.
Yeah, parts of Denver as well. It's really interesting. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of ripple effects we'll see. Maybe in the real estate markets.
It will happen.
In some of these areas?
Yeah, and not so much the broad markets, because at the end of the day, the broad markets are the S&P 500 is driven over the long term over economic growth and earnings from companies.
This is not the same. This isn't people having their money in a large mutual fund or the S&P 500 index fund that's investing in this. That's the word. And even I mentioned Fidelity and Wellington. I'm not here to endorse or otherwise, but it would be in one of their smaller funds,
more aggressive funds.
Yeah, it would clearly be in an aggressive type fund. So it'll be interesting to see what's happening in this market. The kind of thing that I don't know. I'm finding fascinating anyway. So hope the listeners are as well. But you know, this program, of course, we like to talk about things that are going on in the world of finance, and I think this is one. And also, what is happening with you? Most of the people we work with are at or near the retirement stage in life. Of course, that's changing for a lot of people. What retirement? I saw a study, Pat, recently. The average 65-year-old today has the same health and energy of a 57-year-old. Four decades ago.
Well, that makes sense. Or exercise, diet.
Medicine?
Yeah, it makes sense. Many, many clients are living much, much longer with clients that wait for retirement. And what we love to do with every single person is bring them through the 7 personal decision points.
Go to Money Matters. Answer McLean clients, yes.
Yeah, go to moneymatters.com.
And, it's a process we go through to make sure that people are ready for retirement. Maybe you're lucky to work for a tech company and you have your stock options.
Yeah. You've lucky made millions. Few.
Yeah. But otherwise, having a process, being prepared, whether you plan on retiring or not, you want to be in a position so retirement is an option. And so that's the point. Sorry, we're 7 personal decision point process that Hanson McLean goes through. You can go to moneymatters.com and get some more information. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll start taking calls. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. The financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
That's what our objective is, helping make things simple in the world of finance.
It doesn't have to be that complicated. It doesn't
it's the truth.
Have to be that
My
complicated.
My goodness. I tell you what, it's funny because Pat and I both been financial advisors more than 20 years. Hanson McLean's been around 20 some odd years. We've seen it all, right?
I think we've seen it all, and then we see some new stuff every once in a while, you say, wow!
I hadn't seen that before.
I haven't seen that.
But here's the thing. Sometimes we see people with large estates that have extremely complicated financial lives.
Or small estates that have extremely complicated.
And sometimes we see relatively large estates with very simple financial lives, and the same thing with smaller ones. The fact is, just because you have more dollars does not mean it needs to be more complicated. You don't have to go and invest in, be a partner in a private equity firm or several private equity funds. You don't have to necessarily own individual real estate in different states. You don't necessarily have to own commercial. You don't have to, a lot of things you don't have to do.
You don't have to make it complicated.
You can make it very simple. Yeah. And we find most people prefer the simple. Although some people like to make it complicated just so they can feel like
they've
got something.
We find some advisors make it more complicated than it really needs to be. And I don't know if that's a justification. Oftentimes what we see is it's because of commission brokers and that they continue to sell new products in order to generate new commissions.
Yeah. We're getting signals from the other side of the booth here that we need to go to the calls here. Because anyway, if you want to join, we do have lines open. We're going to be taking calls. We're going to go to Jenny here in a second. But if you want to join and get lined up, that doesn't sound very good.
What's that?
Get in line to be on the program. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the show. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766.
It's a metaphorical line. It's not a physical line. It's a metaphorical line.
It's a phone queue.
We're going to answer the phone as soon as they call.
We will answer. It's not going to be one of those. Your call's important to us. That's why we're
we'll
going to make
the
8
phone.
Minutes. All right, let's talk to Jenny. Jenny, you're with Hanson McLean.
Taking my call.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for joining the show.
What I'm calling about is some questions about required minimum distributions.
Okay.
I retired last year, mid-year at 55. I'm currently 56. My husband's been retired for a few years. He turned 70 this year. We've already taken his RMD for this year. But the issue is his family is pretty long-lived. Mine is not. And we have money in several different pots, and I'm trying to figure out which to draw from where.
Okay.
What he has is he has we have annual income of a little over $82,000. This is his Social Security and a couple of pensions. In addition to that, we've got he has an IRA of about $295,000.
All righty.
I have a 401k type vehicle of about $875,000.
Okay, and is it a 401k, 403b, 457? Do you know which one it is?
It's a 401k.
Okay, and you retired when you were 55, is that correct?
And I'm now 56.
Okay, and the money was in the 401k and it still remains in the 401k when you retired, is that correct?
Exactly, and the reason for that is I worked for a consulting firm that has a really, really good 401k.
Well, I'll give you another reason, if you want, is
that
the rules with a 401k, as long as you're 55 or older in the year in which you separate service from a company, you can withdraw without penalty and you pay taxes. Exactly. If you moved it to an IRA, you wouldn't have that flexibility. So you have two reasons to keep
it. It's funny because at Hanson McLean, it's one of the things we tell people often that Before you're 59 and a half, it makes sense to leave your 401k where it is.
Okay, so there's 800, and you said there's how much money in that 401k?
$875,000.
Okay,
so
all right.
And
what's your question for us?
Well, it sounds like you'd like to be able to leave the money in your husband's retirement account and avoid the required minimum distributions. Is that what you're...
Actually, what the real question is, since I have some health issues and there might be the chance that he could outlive me.
Okay.
Is I want to make sure, since his annual income by himself is $82,000, that he doesn't get really crushed with a bunch of taxes if I predecease him.
Got it.
At this point, you know, between the two of us, what we can do is we can take the $82,000 and then go up to the next highest tax bracket where we were before and transfer money around and have some flexibility. But if I die, he's in a position where what's going to happen is that his Medicare premiums are going to go way up.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to, I think that what he can do is withdraw from my 401k, or if I roll it into an IRA, that he can withdraw it based on what my lifespan would have been. You know, he can wait for an RMD from that until I would have been 70 and a half, but I'm not really sure.
Actually, here's how, let's assume something happened to you today and you passed away today and he's the primary beneficiary. He can leave the IRA in your name and be what's called a beneficiary IRA. So your name's still on there.
But Scott, so it's a 401k.
He can establish a beneficiary IRA.
As long as he's the beneficiary on the 401k.
Correct.
Okay.
He could establish a beneficiary. It would be cleaner if it was an IRA. If that's, I mean, if this is like a real concern, it would be cleaner if it was in an IRA for this purpose.
Correct. And remember, you don't have to move 100% of that 401k out. You could leave a couple hundred thousand dollars in the 401k.
Some liquidity.
If you wanted some liquidity and move the rest into the IRA, because if that is a real, if it is a real concern that that something will happen to you before you're 59 and a half.
Let's give you, here's a couple ways to approach this. And it sounds like you're just trying to get some food for thought here. So a couple ways to approach things. One is he's listed as the primary beneficiary on that account. Something happens to you, he can establish what's called a beneficiary IRA. The required minimum distributions are not based upon his age, but based upon, that's not true. That would be based upon his age.
Yeah, because they're spouse.
So it'd be based upon his age.
Can you leave it in the decedent IRA? Can you leave it in the decedent IRA?
Yeah, but he's still going to have the required minimum distributions based upon his. Another way around this, let's think long term. How old do you expect your husband to live?
Well, his dad died in his late 80s and his mom was in her 90s.
Okay, so 25 years, right? And I would imagine
20 years?
So 20 years.
All right.
Would be reasonable.
And do you have children together?
We have two, yes.
Okay, so the plan would probably be, if I'm just guessing, right? You want to, if something happened to you, make sure that the money goes to your husband for his his support over the years, and when he eventually passes on, the assets would be go to the children, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
So what you actually might make the most sense is to have a trust established. I'm trying to think the best way to do this.
I'm not certain.
Well, you could establish a trust and have the kids listed as partial beneficiaries of the trust.
But the distributions are still predicated on the oldest person in the trust.
Are they?
Yeah.
Because I already have a trust for the house.
Yeah, I don't. So the first thing you want to do is figure out what the difference in the distributions are between your tax bracket and the next highest marginal, and then convert those dollars into a Roth IRA. That's the easy part, but it's not going to do much for you.
As much as you can convert.
As much as you can
absolutely
convert.
As much as you convert, that makes sense.
That makes sense because that's the easy part, but it's not going to do much. It's like scratching at the real problem.
I mean, what I ended up doing last year, since I retired mid-year, is that I converted $40,000 within my 401k.
Perfect.
To a Roth within the 401k, and I was going to roll it out of there when I, you know, when it gets to the point where I feel like I really have a problem.
So that's perfect, which is, you know, you fixed approximately 6% or 7% of the problem, right?
Actually, no. I mean, I fixed 6% or 7% of that problem, but in addition to that, we have his almost 300,000 IRA. And then I have Roths, and he has Roths.
Yeah.
So the Roths aren't a problem.
I don't.
Well, they aren't now, but I mean, I'm really concerned about what I've been hearing about. They're thinking about shutting the door on being able to convert, and they're also looking at.
Oh, they're not.
I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't worry about what.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't worry about that. They're not shutting the door on it.
Who knows what'll happen?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
It's a crazy election year. Who knows what's going to happen? But I wouldn't worry about something that. That's just political.
So I actually don't have an answer for you. I don't know.
Here's what I do know. I would actually talk to a pretty clever estate planning attorney and talk through some of these issues. I would work with a certified financial planner. And if this is a real concern, work with a certified financial planner along with an estate planning attorney. I would meet with them both together, sit down with them together. I'm just thinking like how I would approach the situation, right? If someone,
what I would do. Sorry, Scott. What I would do is I'd actually go to the rest of the advisors in the office here, the 17 advisors.
Oh, that's what
that's what I would do.
You're
and say,
with Hans McClain.
Hey, this is the situation. What do you think? That's what I would do.
Yeah.
So, and actually, that's what I'm going to do.
Because this is really an interesting question.
It's a question. I've never had this question.
No. And we just said we've seen it all.
And we did. We haven't seen this.
Well, one other part of it, though, is when we're looking at the money that we're taking out of his pensions and that kind of thing, is that in terms of additional float to just have a nice retirement, we want to have, some extra money to spend. So All of his IRA, the $295,000, is in bonds.
And, you know, Jenny, we normally don't do this, but I'm going to have you stick on the break. Just, this is a unique situation,
sure.
And I don't want to cheat you in your time here. So, okay, we got to take a break because they're giving me dirty looks. So hold on. We'll be right back with you in a minute. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Stick with us.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Back to one of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson, Pat McClain here with you. And normally I don't do this, but we asked Jenny to hold over the break just because it's a very unique situation. So real quick here, Jenny is 56, retired last year. Her husband is age 70. Jenny has almost $1 million in her 401k. Her husband has about $300,000 in his IRA. Her husband has very long life expectancy in her family. Jenny's got some health issues and is just concerned if something happened to her. How do we best plan for the future going forward? Is that kind of a good summation so far, Jenny?
Quite, yeah.
Okay. And so you were asking another question, and then we had to take a break for news. And so what's...
And you said that your husband's IRA is primarily bond, is what you told us,
it's
correct?
Entirely bond.
Okay.
Okay. And mine is sort of a 60-40 split. What I'm thinking is, in terms of, I can roll some of it over into a Roth up to the next tax bracket, mm-hmm. but we also take some money out every year. His, since it's only, you know, the $295,000, his required minimum distribution is somewhere in the neighborhood of $12,000.
That's correct,
yes.
Yeah, so what we want to do is take out a total of either $40,000 or $50,000 in a year. So would it make sense to take the minimum out of what he's got, since it's the bonds, and I'd like to kind of keep the 60-40 thing going on.
Yes.
And then take the rest of it out of my 401k.
Yes.
And whatever else I can do to get to the next highest tax bracket and also avoid higher Medicare premiums for him, roll that over into a Roth.
That's correct.
Yes. Yes.
That's okay.
That's all correct. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Jenny, it sounds like you're trying to get your finances perfect here. And maybe I'm stepping over my bounds. If your life expectancy is clearly looking like it's going to be shorter, and you've got some good health today, we would encourage you to use these dollars to enrich your life for the time you've got.
Oh, you know, thank you. It's not really something that is I'm going to fall off a cliff tomorrow, but. My father died at an age younger than I am, and my mother only made it to 66.
Okay.
I have a heart problem. I'm fine now. I'm not on disability, but it's one of those things where you look at it, and I've been dealing with family finances from the get-go. We've been together for over 30 years. We have two kids, and I just want to make sure that my husband is taken care of.
Yeah. Well, so part of this, and part of this, it might actually be, and you might be wonderful taking care of this on your own. It might be that it would be good to have a relationship with an advisor today, a certified financial planner who's a fiduciary, fee-based advisor, so that if something happens to you, that your husband has a relationship with somebody that you're comfortable with and someone he can trust.
That's something that we just recently started setting up. Not so much the financial planner. We're still looking for that. But we sat down with an estate attorney who
perfect.
Recommended the same thing.
Okay, yeah,
perfect.
Because we see... And a lot of times it's reversed, right? So usually it's the 70-year-old man and a 56-year-old woman. Usually we're planning on the man to go first, right? And a lot of times it's the men, it's not being sexist, just how it's been. A lot of times it's the men who's made the investment decisions. And we're always adamant, at least with our clients, like, look, I want to make sure that you've got your spouse in here as well, because they need to be comfortable with and have a trust relationship with an advisor. If they're not the ones that are up on the finances all the time, and it's been you. If something happens, it's really important that they can have someone they can trust and that you can trust.
Exactly.
Now you sound like you have a great understanding.
Yeah. But there's also that balance. You know, you can't take any of these things with you, right?
Exactly.
You're saving for the future. You retired relatively young, but you're looking at reality. You're thinking, I probably not got a normal life expectancy. So it's good to make sure you're being as prudent as possible and paying as little as taxes. But at some point in time, sometimes it's just okay to say, you know what? It sounds like a ridiculous amount of money. We're going to spend on whatever we feel like spending on, but we're going to do it. So,
all right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Good. Wish you well. You know, Pat, I've got some friends that one of them had a cancer, and it looked like it was a non-curable cancer, treatable cancer, non-curable cancer. So the one spouse, they both retired young, and it's really been watching how they've lived their lives together on all kinds of trips and just spending.
Oh, is that right?
Family's been extremely important to them. And fortunately, this person's lived much longer than, and is still in pretty good health, but it's just gave them a different perspective.
Yeah, I can. Well, I hope I don't see that, but I can understand it. I've seen it with clients a number of times.
Well, certainly at Hanson McLean, we've seen lots of different
hundreds
situations.
Of times.
And I'll never forget a story my dad told me years ago that he was a pharmacist before he retired, and he said there was one of the UPS guys or FedEx guy or some delivery person. He would a little chit chat when he came in one day and said that his spouse had terminal cancer or some terminal illness, so they were going to talk about this trip that they were planning. They're going to do this trip.
Okay.
And so my dad didn't see the guy in a while, and the guy came in and he said, oh, how was your trip? I must have been on the trip. I haven't seen you. Why? He says, oh, no. He says, we didn't go on the trip. It turns out my wife's not dying after all, so we canceled the trip.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My dad kind of looked at him like, wait a minute. You suddenly realize life's short. You're going to enjoy it. This is something you want to do. And then you realize that maybe you got more time, so you don't do what you want to enjoy. It didn't make no sense. Anyway, we're going to go back to the calls. 1-888-2-HANSON's the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. We'll get you on Hanson McLean. And we're talking with Donna. Donna, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there.
Hi, Donna.
How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Okay. I am a retired state employee, and my husband's also retired. And
did he retire from the state as well? I'm sorry.
No, okay. He retired from the railroad.
Okay.
So I get Social Security, he doesn't, and we're doing fine as far as financially, and we aren't anticipating in touching and a need to touch any of our investments. And I do have a financial advisor who's in oversight of one large fund and another one.
Okay.
But I also have three other investments, two banks, and let's see, where's the other one? Two banks and I can't remember all of a sudden. Oh, my work, my old work. I have a 401k.
Okay.
457. My question is, do I need to roll? He's suggesting I roll it all under his control, is not the right word, but oversight.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And is that something I should do?
Well,
they're all doing fine.
And so,
is there a fee that I will get?
Yes. That might not be the driving. So one of the things you said was two banks. What are those two products? Are they bank CDs? Are they annuities? Are they mutual funds that you purchased through a bank?
One is a rollover IRA from a parent that passed away.
Okay.
And the other one is some mutual funds. And then I have some in cash.
Okay. So
is the advisor do you have all the is the money basically held in one institution like Charles Schwab or Fidelity or TD Ameritrade, something like that?
But the large amount is with one fund.
Is it one fund or is it a custodian like Charles Schwab or Pershing or Fidelity?
TD Ameritrade. Okay, so it's an independent advisor, sounds like, and you're paying a fee?
Are you paying a fee?
Uh-huh.
Okay, mm-hmm. So here's probably what, and you're taking a distribution from the IRA at the bank that you inherited, correct?
No, I'm not taking anything.
You inherited it from a parent?
A parent that passed away.
How long ago?
2 years.
And how much was it? How much money was it?
Oh, it's not very much. It was like $39,000.
Okay.
You're going to have to fully distribute that within 3 years.
You know that.
No.
Okay, so here you just answered the question for us. You should probably, if you have a competent advisor,
That you trust. Those are two big assumptions.
Right. One is that they're competent. You could look at their regulatory record by going to brokercheck.com, and you could look at their education, and you could look at their regulatory. So go to brokercheck.com.
Or actually at moneymatters.com, we've got a webinar on lies, lawsuits, and levies, what your broker doesn't want you to know. It's just, it lays out all the ways you can do a background check on your advisor.
So watch that video and then follow the steps in the webinar. And one of those steps is go to brokercheck.com.
Yeah, but
if
beneficiaries, IRAs, they need to have the distribution needs to begin no later than December 31st following the year of death in order to stretch it out over your lifetime. If the distributions don't begin by that date, it must be distributed within 5 years.
So you've gotten bad advice.
Well, or you didn't get advice from the bank and you didn't let your advisor in on what was happening at the bank.
Okay.
What this tells, and the reason I asked the question was to see if you were actually getting competent advice.
And I don't expect the bank to give you advice.
Competent advice. And the 457 or 401k, what's the account balance there?
It's about 70.
Okay. And do you know how it's allocated? Like how much is the percentage in stocks or in bonds?
No.
Okay. You need to get all of this into one spot. But make sure it's the right spot. How long have you worked with the advisor?
For years.
Okay.
Years.
Go to our website, moneymatters.com. Watch the webinar, Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits. Follow through that, which means do a background check on the advisor, even though you've used them for years. If they check out and the advisor is competent, then you absolutely should move dollar over to that advisor, and your advisor will actually add value because you don't know what you own and you've already actually probably made mistakes. Not big ones, but little ones. And it's worth paying for in your situation if the advisor is competent. So appreciate the call.
All right.
I will occur some fees for moving.
No. It's an ongoing fee. You're going to pay the advisor a little bit every year based on the size of the account.
But it probably save you a lot of money, which just happened here. We're up against the clock. We got to take a break. This is Hanson McLean.
Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. Back to Northern California's financial experts, Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to, I just want to get back on, but I'm kind of enjoying the music. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for sticking with us.
You know, the only time I could listen to music I like is typically in my car. My wife and I, we could not be more dissimilar on the music we like. I mean, I don't quite understand, but she doesn't like rock very much.
No?
I like almost anything.
Scott, has her taste in music changed since you met her?
She's the lovely woman that I married 24 years ago.
There we go. That's all I'm saying.
Wouldn't trade her for anybody.
Okay, I don't think you're going to get that choice. I don't know where that thing came from. I don't think that people are offered the choice of trading their spouse for someone.
It happens. Actually, I remember as a young man, one of the things I've always said is, I don't want to be one of those guys who's in his 50. I'm turning 50 this year. I said, I don't want to be one of those guys who's 50 who's...
what?
Trades in his wife.
Hosting a radio show. No, trades in his wife. I don't think it's a trade-in. That's my point.
Whatever you want to call it.
You go down to the used wife lot.
It wouldn't be a used one.
It wouldn't be a used one. That
sounds really, really bad.
I don't think it's a trade-in. It's not like Wife Max, like CarMax, where you go,
God, that's horrible. Well, how do we even get this conversation? That's
my point, when people say I wouldn't trade for anything, I don't
think part of my point, actually, 24 years of marriage, I've got a wonderful woman. The last thing I ever want to do is not have her. I tell you that much.
That's good.
And
I can agree. I wouldn't want you to be with anyone. But
you know what's interesting? If you look at, we have a lot of retired clients at Hanson McLean, because we want thousands of clients. Lots.
What percentage do you think is retired? It's got to be greater than 50%.
Oh yeah, but the amount of people who divorce at the retirement stage. So I was looking at some numbers the other day. In the year 2012, last time a census did a thing, it was, if you look at divorces, one out of four divorces occurred from people age 50 and above. That number is almost double from 25 years ago.
Say that number again.
One in four divorces are from people age 50 and older. The divorce rate is going up in the retirement age folks. People, I mean, 50 is not really retirement age, but people are moving towards retirement.
As they get older.
Yes, it's very common.
On a historical basis.
Compared to history. It's just common. And yeah. Everything else aside, besides that it may not make your life better, it is typically disastrous on the finances.
Oh, brutal.
No, it is. We see what happens when couples go through divorce, particularly at that stage in life, and it can really do damage to their
financial situation.
So, yeah. I saw this recently. This FINRA came out with this thing. This 1 in 13 brokers, these are registered stock
7%
brokers, have some sort of misconduct on their record.
7%?
Done something bad enough so that the regulators slap them.
The regulators.
7%.
7%.
Now, would you think that 7% of medical doctors?
When I read the article, I thought exactly the same thing.
Can you imagine if 7% of medical doctors have some sort of slap on the record from the regulators?
Same
and
system.
Half of these had ethical lapses. It gets worse or better, I guess, depending on how you want to look at it. Worse. Those that have been fired for ethical lapses, these are brokers fired for ethical lapses. Almost half of those, 44%, have been rehired by other firms. They're working for another firm within a year. Yes. So a firm fires somebody because they've done something unethical, half of them land a job somewhere else.
Yeah.
In financial services.
So we in the last segment, we talked about the webinar, liars, levies, and lawsuits, the things your broker may not want you to know. If you watch it, short little video, shows you how to do a background check on your existing advisor or someone you're considering hiring.
We saw one recently,
one of the advisors in our office in Northern California was sharing with me. She was telling me how a client came into the office, had given this advisor some $500,000. The advisor bought a single stock, lost 90% of its value.
What?
90% of its value.
Not recently.
Recently.
A single stock?
A single stock. Who knows? Lost 90% of its
value. What stock was it? Did he have some interest in the company?
You guess. 90% of its value. So what's our advisor do? The first thing? Goes to broker check, looks it up. Just a laundry list of sanctions from the regulators. And all the client had to do was...
Beforehand
was look at the background of the person that you're trusting with your money.
I tell you what, I know of an advisor. He's not an advisor. I don't know what you want to call him. He's in the financial services field. He was kicked out, disbarred from the...
Thrown out from
the New York Stock Exchange for 5 years. That the regulators thought so highly of him, they threw him out for 5 years. So he's back in. He gave up his securities license. I know this industry is a complicated regulation, but just stick with me. But he somehow managed to keep his insurance license, and he got registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission as a registered investment advisor.
Got it.
But he sells everybody annuities, equity index annuities.
That's what
an equity
see.
Index. I saw someone, they sold this one individual 11 of them. And it's not an unsophisticated person or small amount, millions of dollars, 11,
that's
every dollar, 11 different equity index annuities. This person had been barred from the industry. These equity index annuities are not regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, nor are they regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. They're registered by the Department of Insurance. They don't always regulate them very well. So this guy's essentially just been...
Anyway,
I'm just getting frustrated. We better take a call.
Go to our website, moneymatters.com. 888-2- moneymatters.com. And there's lots of information there to do background checks on your person you're considering hiring, or how annuities work, or what investments look like, or the seven personal decisions.
We do have a Money Matters Academy. It's a great academy, that moneymatters.com. We have a lot of good stuff there. Anyway, let's talk with Lynn. Lynn, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn.
Oh, what a pleasure to talk to you guys. I just love your show.
Well, thank you. Wow. What can we do for you?
Keep it coming,
Lynn. You just got me thinking in every which way.
All right. What?
I was recently widowed in 2014. Now, this is the first, 2015 will be the first year I'm on my own. But with regard to my solvency, I'm very solvent.
Okay.
My home's paid for. All right, I've good. Got a home warranty. I've got my car paid for. And,
okay.
You know, I'm good to go. But I'm looking at what I have, and when I called you, it was right after I got my interest statement, right? And I have $240,000 in between the credit union and a bank.
And is it and in? Is it in savings accounts?
Yeah, kind of a market rate.
Okay, money markets. Okay.
Yeah, money market.
And you're frustrated at the low rates.
Of course. I get $500.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got.
Have you ever invested it anywhere else?
Years ago, I was in stocks. In 2009, I cashed out because everything was tanking. I took a $4,000 loss.
Okay.
And I recouped it through my income tax.
Okay, so Lynn.
Yes.
So that was 7 years ago, and you're 70 now. So that was when you were age 60.
I'll be 70 this year.
Okay.
So
my recommendation for the money:
do not put it in the stock market.
Leave it where it's at.
Okay.
Your risk tolerance didn't get any better between the last 7 years and today. In fact, it got worse. You lost a spouse, right?
Yeah.
You've aged some. You had a nasty experience in your experience in the markets. It wasn't either good or bad. It was just what it was.
Is your income fine right now?
It was a wash.
Lynn, is your income fine, what's coming in through Social Security and a pension or whatever?
I get survivor benefit, my pension, and Social Security. My home's paid for.
Right. Lynn?
I have,
leave it in the savings account, not just in the bank, because at some point in time,
don't let anyone sell you anything.
There's a guy or a lady that's nicely dressed sitting in the corner of the bank that's going to want to talk to you about your investments in order to get a higher rate of return. They're going to recommend it,
and they'll be really nice. Oh, Lynn, I love that blouse
today. How do you know? Oh, this is great.
Your hair looks fantastic.
Stay away from those people. They are.
Yeah.
Stay away. Leave that money in a money market.
Seriously.
Or bank CD. It's nowhere else.
Your life will not. Here's the thing.
If you came into my office, I'd throw you out and tell you, keep that money in the bank.
And here's why, Lynn. Here's the reality. If you make a move to something that's going to fluctuate in value, it will not make your life any better. Okay? This is really about Lynn's quality of life. You've got enough income coming in from your other income sources. You're in fine shape. You're not needing the interest off this. Yes, interest is low. It's bad. But return of principal oftentimes is better than return on principal. We would recommend leave it there. Music means we're out of time. We're here every Saturday, Sunday, this same time. Also, you can get a podcast of this, moneymatters.com. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.